Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Safe Drinking Water Fund Media Briefing. At this time, all lines are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will be given at that time. If you should require assistance during today's call, please press star, then zero. As a reminder, today's call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to our host, George Kostrikow. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Kayla, and good afternoon, and I want to thank everyone for joining us today. I am George Kostrikow with the Office of Public Affairs for the State Water Resources Control Board. The subject of today's call are the planned activities tomorrow and Wednesday for the board's upcoming meeting on the Safe and Affordable Drinking Water Program. Following Governor Newsom's signing of Senate Bill 200 last month, the board has a scheduled meeting of August 20 to 21 to take action on funding and discuss implementation plans to close the safe drinking water gap that affects more than 1 million Californians. On this call, we will also demonstrate a new interactive web-based map tool for assessing water quality, affordability, and accessibility for each of the state community water systems. The tool will help the State Water Board track progress toward achieving the goals of safe and affordable drinking water for all Californians. As a reminder to media on the call, if you have not registered to view the online demonstration of the interactive web tool, please do so now during our introductory remarks. Please visit the advisory I sent earlier for the URL. All you are asked to do is put your name and your present email address. You can register and participate. If you are already logged in on the screen, you should see an image of the state of California. This call is for accredited media only. As I told the operator, we are asking that reporters in the queue ask one question and one follow-up question only. If you have other questions, please get back into queue. We plan to stay here and answer all media questions, so you will have a chance to ask follow-up questions. On the call today, we have Jared Blumenfeld, Secretary of the California Environmental Protection Agency. His first name is spelled J-A-R-E-D. Last name is spelled B-L-U-M-E-N-F-E-L-D. We also have E. Joaquin Esquivel, Chair of the State Water Resources Control Board. First name is spelled J-O-A-Q-U-I-N. Last name is spelled E-F-Q-U-I-V-E-L. We also have Dr. Lauren Zeiss, Director of the Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment. First name is spelled L-A-U-R-E-N. Last name is spelled Z-E-I-S-E. And finally, we have Andrew Altvoigt, Assistant Executive Officer for the Central Valley Regional Water Board and on loan as the Program Manager for the Safe and Affordable Drinking Water Program. First name is spelled A-N-D-R-E-W. Last name is spelled A-L-T-E-V-O-G-T. I will now turn the call over to Secretary Blumenfeld.
Thanks, George, and thanks everyone on the line. Really appreciate you being on the call today. And as you'll hear from the conversation and I think see from the webinar portion of it, really a lot of exciting work has been going on. From day one of my discussions with Governor Newsom, this has been an incredibly important priority for him. And I remember like 2 years ago, the first time I explained to him that we had more than a million people in the state of California that didn't have access to safe and affordable drinking water. It was like, that just can't be true. And when you tell people, you know, that fact in a state which is the fifth largest economy in the world, I think people are just generally shocked. And so he, from day one of this administration, has made it a top priority to make sure that we address it in a comprehensive way. And I think most importantly, as you're going to hear from the discussion, there's much that has already been done. We've had state revolving fund monies over the years. We've had different proposition money from voters. But this was kind of the missing part to make it all work. And really, a huge amount of kudos needs to go to community advocates throughout the state who pushed relentlessly and tirelessly for decades to get this done. And so we're really thrilled that in tomorrow's board action, will bring a culmination of really the first phase, which is getting the funding in place, and it's really an important inflection and pivot point to the second phase, which is implementation. And as difficult as it has been to get the money, The implementation is really going to be complex. Every community kind of has its own needs and circumstances, and you're going to hear from Joaquin and others about how we're going to move forward with that. So from the beginning, in fact, our first cabinet meeting, Governor Newsom took the entire cabinet on a bus to Monterey Park Tract just by Lodi and said to us, you know, this is something that we can't achieve in the first year. We really need to assess where we're going. And thankfully, he, from that day, pushed all of us and the legislature that deserves a lot of credit here. The legislature really decided, you know what, we tried last year, but we're going to try again and think about all the creative ways we can solve this issue. So SB 200 establishes a Safe and Affordable Drinking Water Fund. Senator Monning particularly deserves credit, and I want to thank him for all his efforts. It provides $130 million a year through 2030, and it really looks at this gap, which is operation and maintenance. We've had money to build things, but in many communities, they simply don't have the rate base to support continuing to finance the operation and maintenance. It also does a number of things that Joaquin, the chair, will talk about in a minute. But I want to say that as part of the governor's commitment to safe and affordable drinking water, he appointed Joaquin Esquivel as the chair of the State Water Resources Control Board, and he also named Laurel Firestone, a longtime community advocate, onto the board, and she's also been really championing our work on safe and affordable drinking water from a different position than she spent at Community Water Center. She's now a voice on the board, and she's been enormously impactful in helping us think through this work. So we've been busy before we even knew it passed, meeting many times a week to develop a strategic plan and think about the building blocks for getting this project launched. So with that, it's a real pleasure to introduce you to the chair of the State Water Resources Control Board, Joaquin Esquivel.
Thank you, Secretary Blumenfeld. This is really, it is an incredibly historic year, and although it's a culmination of a number of years' work and leadership with the legislature and community advocates and previous administrations, it really has been Governor Newsom embracing really the call and the work to get this across the finish line this year, and we're incredibly fortunate for that. And it extends now into what will be a huge lift when you talk about implementation. I think there is a lot of expectations, certainly around the dollars. There's been many years that the fund has been discussed, that communities have contemplated, that, you know, if we really take a step back, you can look at the arc of this going back to 2012, when California became the first state in the nation to have the human right to water, and to really enshrine in our water code. And then it was up to the legislature and the agencies to make it real. It's one thing to commit to human right to water, to say that all Californians should have access to clean, safe, affordable water for the purposes of drinking, cooking, and sanitation needs, but how do we actually make that real? And it's been a journey that also can be pegged to 2014, when the Division of Drinking Water was brought over from the Department of Public Health and given to the water boards. And from there, the legislature and, as I said, previous leaders, we have, because of them, we had capital dollars from Proposition 1, increased technical assistance capabilities. We had established an Office of Sustainable Water Solutions, where we have mandatory consolidation authorities. No other state in the nation has those as well, recognizing that part of the issue here is really the long-term sustainability of these systems, and legislation to help us knowing, again, that, you know, somewhere between 90 and 95%, I think, of the violations of primary maximum contaminant limits are from systems under 500 connections, the ability to stop the proliferation of other smaller systems that we know in, you know, 20, 30 years may become an issue as well, like those that we see now. And so that really, what we're going to intend to do these next 2 days is really frame then that work that has been done these last years, what those authorities have allowed us to do, what are the lessons that we've learned, and where this fund, this new fund, the Safe and Affordable Fund that's funded through the GGRF, the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund dollars, how does it fit? Where are we going to prioritize these dollars?
and begin to really make real, again, further this human right to water, the promise of the human right to water, knowing that this fund is that keystone that will allow us to more flexibly and creatively ensure that we have regionalization of our systems. We know that hundreds of community water systems serving hundreds of thousands of Californians are unable to reliably treat contaminants such as arsenic, nitrates, and 1-2-3 TCP, and that 1,500 systems, small systems, face a great risk of unsafe water. Small systems are least likely to afford those necessary upgrades or cost of regional consolidations. And ultimately, bringing small systems into compliance is often best accomplished through consolidations. So consolidations increase efficiencies and help deliver safe drinking water to rural and isolated communities. Ultimately, it's about solutions, and we have near and long-term solutions available to the Division of Drinking Water, and we're going to be applying all those strategies to ensure differing goals are met. Near-term solutions include temporary connections to safe sources, point-of-use systems, drilling wells into uncontaminated aquifers, and trunking water directly to communities. Long-term goals are to ensure that all drinking water systems can sustainably and affordably provide drinking water to everyone they serve. Long-term solutions that will lead to safe and sufficient systems include funding upgrades, consolidation, and regionalization, which includes linking smaller systems to larger ones, both physically and sometimes administratively. Going forward, and our first steps, our goals for the program are to really identify high-risk systems and areas on private wells or state smalls in order to proactively support prevention and resiliency, and to support, strongly promote, rather, the consolidation of regional solutions that increase resiliency and economies of scale. We also look to accelerate project development and implementation timelines. We'll look to develop and support comprehensive solutions assistance services with local technical and managerial capacity building that ensure long-term solutions and maximize community benefits. And we'll also be making sure that we have that systems have access to immediate and interim solutions where needed. For greater detail now, I'll turn to Andrew Altfoget, who is the Assistant Executive Officer for the Central Valley Regional Water Board, and on loan as Program Manager for the Safe and Affordable Water Program, who can now speak more specifically about our programs and funding sources.
Thank you, Chair Esquivel. The State Water Board, through its Division of Drinking Water, has the enforce federal and state drinking water statutes and is responsible for the regulatory oversight of nearly 8,000 public water systems throughout the state. The State Water Board also has a division of financial assistance that awards state and federal grants and loans for drinking water infrastructure. The Safe and Affordable Drinking Water Program includes an additional $130 million per year through 2030 to support safe drinking water needs. There are a number of funding sources that the state water boards can draw from to fund safe and affordable drinking water projects. In general terms, to get this program moving quickly, the state boards plan to focus available resources acted on by the board on August 20th, and they include, firstly, a one-time general fund appropriation. Assembly Bill 72 amended the Budget Act of 2018 to appropriate $20 million from the general fund for safe drinking water programs. There is also the Drinking Water State Revolving Fund. The purpose of the Drinking Water State Revolving Fund is to provide financial assistance for the planning, design, and construction of drinking water infrastructure projects that are needed to achieve or maintain compliance with federal and state drinking water statutes and regulations. Funding for the Drinking Water State Revolving Fund comes from federal grants, state sources, and loan repayment. We also have available bond funding. Proposition 68 was passed by voters in June 2018. The State Water Board will administer $220 million for safe drinking water and $74 million from Chapter 11.1 for grants for treatment and remediation activities that prevent or reduce contamination of groundwater that serves as a source of drinking water. And finally, there is the Safe and Affordable Drinking Water Fund, which was established through Senate Bill 200 in 2019. The fund will provide $130 million per year that will be used to develop and implement sustainable solutions for small systems with violations of drinking water standards. The process for applying for funding is under development and will be announced soon. The Division of Financial Assistance is creating a simple pre-application for disadvantaged community water and wastewater projects, and depending on the type of projects, then the applicant will be directed to the appropriate funding program. Technical assistance will also be available to help communities apply for funding. In conclusion, prioritization criteria are being established. Priority will be given to public water systems, consolidating or regionalization projects that can show long-term resiliency and sustainability for communities or schools that are unable to currently meet Safe Drinking Water Act standards. In areas with high population density but without centralized infrastructure, priority will be given to consolidation or regionalization projects that consolidate disadvantaged neighborhoods without public water systems into larger public water systems, especially in areas with high risk of contamination or water shortage. Well rehabilitation or point-of-use retrofit options will likely be the best long-term solutions for households in remote or isolated areas with known or high risk of contamination or water shortage. Finally, the State Water Board has existing agreements with interim assistance providers and funding available to provide temporary supplies of safe drinking water. At this point, I will turn the call over to OEHA Director Lauren Zeitz, who will discuss their role in developing a human right to water risk assessment effort intended to track progress on safe, accessible, and affordable water.
Thank you, Andrew.
Dr. Zeitz, can you hold on a second? Operator? This is
yeah.
George. Are we having people still in queue to get on the call?
No.
Okay, because I'm getting some feedback from some people that they're on hold waiting to get in.
All right, we do not have any lines on hold.
Okay, I just want to double check. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry,
okay.
Dr. Zeitz.
Sure, thank you. Thank you, Andrew. OEHA, the Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment, in collaboration with the Water Board, has developed an assessment tool and report to help us understand how we're doing overall in achieving the human right to water. So it's critical that the state track progress on achieving safe, accessible, and affordable drinking water, and that includes developing metrics that can inform funding and policy decisions. Well, we had developed a framework and analytical methodology for assessing how the state's water systems are doing in providing safe, accessible, and affordable drinking water over time. There are various analytic components to the human right of water with varying degrees of complete data statewide. Recognizing this, OEHA began its analysis with the state's community water systems. These are systems that serve 15 connections or more and that deliver water to more than 90% of the state's overall population. The draft report and data tool, which provide OEHA's initial assessment of the state's community water systems, will be released tomorrow and discussed to a greater degree tomorrow during the State Water Board's meeting. As proposed, the draft assessment identifies a set of 13 indicators that measure and provide a baseline or snapshot depiction of the status of our community water systems. And they measure three key elements: water quality, the degree the water is free from pathogens and significant levels of chemical contaminants; accessibility, the extent that the water is provided in sufficient amounts to meet everyday household needs, or providing water that may be at risk; and affordability, the extent the water is affordable to the household served by the water system. The assessment tells us what specific issues, regional patterns, or challenges might be in need of attention now or that should be reevaluated with updated or enhanced data. We plan to release additional versions of the tool so that we can track trends and how individual water systems are doing over time. So we planned a short demonstration of the data tool For those of you who have clicked on the link in the earlier media advisory this morning, you should see a map on your screen. And if not, you should click on the link that was sent in the advisory. Above the map, you should see tabs for each of the areas of analysis: water quality, accessibility, and affordability. What is up on the screen is the map for water quality. Each disc represents a community water system. The color of the disc gives the overall score for that system's water quality. The score is a combination of scores for 7 different water quality indicators and illustrates how individual community water systems have been doing. The lighter the disc, the higher the score, and the better the system is doing. On the left side of the screen, there are brief explanations of the 7 water quality indicators. Water quality is evaluated by 19 key contaminants that may be present in a system's drinking water. The water quality analysis has been done for the 3 most recent complete 3-year compliance cycles, so the 9-year period covering 2008 to 2016. We have 4 exposure indicators based on data on contaminant levels in water being delivered to people's homes. The first indicator measures high potential exposure, which counts the number of contaminants with an annual average water concentration above the water standard, the maximum contaminant level, or the MCL. You can click on the associated map. Okay, so it should be loading on your screen. You can see a large number of light disks. This shows that the majority of systems without any average contaminant levels above the MCL. The darkest disks show those systems with 4 or more contaminants above the MCL. Increasing the resolution of the map, you can see systems in more detail, and the system service area is outlined. If you click on an individual disk or on the area, you can get the details on that indicator for that system. The second water quality indicator looks at whether any contaminants with high exposures are acute contaminants, such as nitrate or coliform bacteria. And these are associated with significant health effects after short periods of high exposure. The third indicator looks at the number of years during the most recent 3-year compliance cycle that had high exposures. The fourth water quality indicator gets at data availability, the extent to which required data were available on the different contaminants. Each of these indicators have accompanying maps, and you can also access an explanation for each of the indicators on the left-hand side. Right now, those links are not live, but they will be live tomorrow when we post the full report. So a second element of water quality evaluates system non-compliance with drinking water standards and directly assesses a system's MCL violations. One indicator counts the number of contaminants for which there were MCL violations. A second indicator looks at whether any of those violations were for acute contaminants. And the third indicator counts the maximum duration of a system was in non-compliance. For each water system, we assign a score for each indicator based on scoring criteria that are explained in the report that will be released tomorrow. And then we have an additional formula for calculating a single water quality score for each system from its individual indicator scores. And that's how we obtain the overall scores for water quality on the map under the water quality tab, the first map under the tab. So a similar structure is used to look at the 2 other components, accessibility. This component is the second component. This component looks at the reliability and accessibility of a water system for its customers. The system's physical vulnerability for outages. For example, whether it is reliant on a single well or has multiple sources of water or backup supplies. This component also evaluates institutional vulnerability through measures of the ability of a system to make infrastructure investments. Is there enough funding to fix problems, for example? It also measures management constraints indicated by non-compliance with monitoring and reporting. These are indicators of challenge where resources may be needed to support the system. Similar to water quality, for each system we combine individual indicator scores to come up with an overall score for accessibility, the basis for the map under the accessibility tab. So the third component of the Human Right to Water data tool measures water affordability for average as well as low-income Californians. The first indicator compares a system's average monthly water bill for 600 cubic feet of water. This is an amount considered necessary for a typical household's basic needs. So this average monthly bill is compared to the median household income in the service area. And we calculate the ratio of these two, the water bill over divided by the median household income for that service area. The second indicator compares the water bill with a poverty threshold for that county. The third indicator compares the water bill at the 600 cubic feet of water amount. It compares it to the deep poverty threshold for the county. So the component score for affordability combines these indicators, taking into account the percentage of a system's customers falling within these income levels. So that is a quick walkthrough of the tool. Again, this is a draft tool and a work in progress. We'll be posting the tool tomorrow. We'll also be conducting workshops of the tool to gather public input, and we'll also be soliciting written comments during a public comment period. So with that, I'll turn the meeting back over to George.
And thank you very much, Dr. Zeiss. That was very interesting. So, operator, at this point, we're ready for the question and answer part of our call.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star, then one on your touch tone phone. Our first question comes from the line of Deborah Kahn with Politico. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Thanks very much. I was just hoping you could kind of lay out what is actually going to happen tomorrow. It looks like there's about like four different agenda items dealing with either the Safe and Affordable Drinking Water Act or the Human Right to Water. So can you just kind of lay out substantively what's actually happening tomorrow? Like, are you voting to authorize any spending of money, and just kind of lay out what is actually going to happen? Thank you.
Hi, Deborah. This is Joaquin. Thanks for the question. So this is one of our usual, monthly or twice monthly board meetings. And I will open up the meeting as I usually do. We will have approval of our board minutes. We'll do public forum, and then we'll do uncontested items. I think that will largely be, as you saw, probably it's an underground, it's a groundwater cleanup grant program. It's about $89 million, I think, that we're authorizing there. And then there, as part of SB 200, there were about 13 projects that were funded with about $30 million, so we'll be authorizing that, so that's a separate item as well. And then the main item will be for this $130 million authorization for the Division of Financial Assistance and the Water Board generally to go forth and begin setting up the program. So it's just an approval for the amount and for really for the staff to just begin work. Next July, what's due is an expenditure plan, I believe it is known as, and so that will have further detail and certainly go into all the specifics as to what we will actually be spending the dollars on. This is just to kick everything off, be able to start staffing up, and to really begin to start the public discussion as well, knowing that we'll be soon setting up the committee, advisory committee, that will be helping with the Safe and Affordable Fund implementation discussion. So So that'll be, so procedurally that's what we'll go through. But then on the second day we will have a workshop on the administrator manual that we've already publicly released that is also part of the work required around SB 200.
Is that okay, it? Thanks. And then I was just wondering, so the $30 million for the 13 projects, that's separate from the $130 million, correct?
Yes, it is. It is separate.
Thanks.
And Deborah, this is George. We're probably going to have some follow-up media, like press release, following the board action tomorrow to kind of capture everything for you guys.
Great.
Okay. Next call in the queue, operator.
The next question comes from the line of Emily Dooley with Bloomberg Environment. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for having this call. I appreciate it. Deborah pretty much asked my question, but I do have a follow-up. Do you have a sense of the numbers of staffing that you're going to hire to implement all this?
Yeah, I'll turn that over to Andrew, our program manager.
So currently we have authorized in the budget 23 positions, and so those 23 positions are really what's going to see us through the first year of the program in terms of getting things developed, getting the plan in place, and starting work on the program.
Great, thanks.
All right, next a reporter in the queue, operator.
Next question comes from the line of Adam Beam with AP. Please go ahead.
Hi, yes, you had mentioned about a report that's coming out tomorrow about kind of the status of all the public water systems in the state. I just want to make sure I'm understanding that correctly, and if that will, if something that might be available to us on an embargoed basis, at least we could kind of take a look and assess it before it's released.
So, yes, the report that's being released tomorrow is the report underlying the Human Right to Water tool that we've just demonstrated.
And Adam, this is Dr. Lauren Zeiss on the phone right now.
And I think the report will be available tomorrow. We can see whether or not we can make it available before then, but we expect to have the report available tomorrow.
Great. Just in general, that kind of helps us to, you know, plan to be able to look at it in advance, of course, you know, under an embargoed agreement. Also, I was just curious about, I mentioned earlier, I think it might have been Joaquim, about there's some funding available for temporary drinking water. I was wondering, you know, how much that's costing the state and how many communities are receiving that.
I appreciate that. So, you know, what we have are the cleanup and abatement account, which we've used for emergency and temporary drinking water solutions. You can look back at the drought, and as you recall, there was a big effort around East Porterville, and we had some dollars there that were given to us, I think, specifically for some of those efforts. But so when it comes to immediate and interim drinking water solutions, we have existing accounts. The Safe and Affordable Fund can be used. It's one of the allowable uses within the legislation. I think what we're trying to do is ensure that we're having a discussion as to where best to direct these dollars. So there are dollars for immediate and temporary solutions within the Safe and Affordable Fund. But like I said, historically, we have had access and still have access and will continue to prioritize, I think, from those funds as well, the Cleanup and Abatement Fund and other sources. But I'll also let Leslie Loudon respond, who is our Deputy Chief and the Head of Division of Financial Assistance, for further clarification, because how we get
Hi, this is Leslie Loudon, and we do have a number of different funding sources for interim drinking water supplies. Some of them, as Joaquin mentioned, were in prior authorizations, and we've administered some of them. And then some are included in that initial, the item that the board will be approving tomorrow for those $31 million. Some of that are AB 74 included $1 million for urgent drinking water needs, and also $10 million for drinking water and wastewater repairs. So some of those are for emergency projects. And then there were also a list of some specific projects in AB 74, and so the board will be looking, the resolution they'll be considering also authorizes us to go ahead with those projects.
Does that answer the question, or?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Adam, thanks for the great question. Operator, could you move to the next reporter in queue?
As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star, then one at this time.
All right. This is George Kosirko. I know we've got probably more than a couple reporters on the phone here. I know we've thrown a lot at you. If you guys have any follow-up questions, don't hesitate to reach out to me by my email in the advisory. So this is kind of one more opportunity here to pose some questions to the folks here at the table if you're interested. All right. Well, operator, it appears that we have no more questions, so why don't we go ahead and conclude this call. One last thing for the media. I will be at the meeting. I'll be watching my email. If you guys have any follow-up questions during the meeting, do not hesitate to email me directly, and I will try and find out the answer for you during the meeting. And thank you very much. This concludes the call for today.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using AT&T Executive Teleconference. You may now disconnect.